Welcome to the PLL Happy Hour. The Premier Lacrosse League went to Long Island, so of course things got contentious this week, as things do on Long Island. And then the PLL All-Star voting happened just today, so a lot of stuff to talk about. We're going to start there with the PLL All-Stars. I'm Matt Kinnear, here with Dan Kaplan, Kevin Brown, and Chris Rosenthal. We're bringing you the PLL Happy Hour, and this has been such a weird but fun week if you're a pro lacrosse fan. The All-Star voting came out, and it is heavy on – it's fan-voted, so it is definitely heavy on fan favorites, not necessarily the best players who should be in the PLL All-Star game. So overall reaction, Dan Kaplan, we're going to start with you. What is the biggest snub from the fan voting for the PLL All-Star game?
The biggest snub, I mean, I'll say it's Jules Henningberg right away off the bat. I'll also say hello to everybody who's listening. How are we?
We're just getting into it.
Yeah, we've got to get into it.
We got to Long Island. There's no time for chit-chat. You just go into it.
No chit-chat. I haven't even been able to come on since my PLL in-person experience. So I get to dive into that. So I have a lot to say. But, yes, number one, if we're getting right to it, I'll say Jules Henningberg is my biggest snub.
Not only not part of the, you know, all-star voting from the fans, but not one of the reserves either, which, you know, seems pretty shocking to me. Also, I'm shocked he was not one of the fan-voted players, because he does seem to me like a fan favorite, you know, a guy that fans really root for and cheer for. And basically the Redwoods seem to have carte blanche with the All-Star game. Chris, you tweeted that earlier, that this is basically the Redwoods playing the All-Star game. What is your snub, and what do you make of all those Woods on this team?
So the first snub that came – okay, so I'll only give one. I'm trying to decide between – there's two that stick out super, but I don't want to take them both off the table. So I will just go ahead and say Graham Hossett definitely should have been a starting defenseman in the All-Star game. And, yeah, heavy, heavy on the Redwoods for the fan votes. 8 of the 22 starters are from the Redwoods. It's obviously, you know, the most successful team right now or anything like that. But I think it comes down to players that are extremely popular and have been extremely popular generally for a few years at least. So, you know, consistently popular players, you know, who people just really wanted to see. You know, it's definitely a fan favorite sort of all-star thing, I think, is largely what the fans took into consideration, just, you know, who their favorite players are, regardless of any other circumstance.
One of those is Kyle Harrison, a guy we've talked about and who I think we all admire and respect. And he's the guy that I get in terms of, you know, voting for the fan favorite. He's retiring. You want to see him in the all-star game. I feel like that's something that's happened in any pro league. It is kind of the outgoing superstar gets the nod for the all-star and, you know, is the guy who puts up all the points and gets the glory for one last time at the all-star game. But a lot of these other selections are a little bit of head scratchers. Kevin, we're going to go to you. Your snub.
Yeah. My big snub, I think, leaving Connor Kelly off both the starters and reserves. I think he's been a big bright spot for the Water Dogs, who kind of struggle offensively. You saw that in their Saturday afternoon loss. But, yeah, like you said, it's about what the fans want. If they want to see all the Redwoods ball out, then so be it. Obviously, KT, he's going to get his last tour. I was saying this to Dan at the Fields. What was his last game at Homewood Field? They should have just treated it as the Lakers versus Utah, give it to Kobe Bryant for 60 points and have him take all the shots. But, I mean, they lost regardless. And although they got back in the winning column this week, it was kind of curious. I think the defensive guys, you see mic'd up a lot on their social channels, like Eddie Glazner and TD making it over Joe Nardella, I think is a kind of a surprise. But Jared Newman over Graham Hossett is like Chris said, probably the biggest.
I think Jared Newman is the biggest head scratcher. And I wrote the story on him about a few years back about, you know, his really just the way he's overcome the odds and his impressive background and his ability to maybe be one of the best defenders in the world. He certainly has not shown that this year so far. I got to go with, we talked about him a few weeks ago on the podcast, Zach Currier not being one of the selections by the fans. Because I just don't understand that, because I thought everyone loved Zach Currier. Coaches, fans, everyone alike, I thought for sure he would be in the fan vote. And, you know, if I'm building a team, he's going to be, the regardless of position, the number two guy that I go with. It's going to go through the Princeton midfield. It's going to be Tom Schreiber and Zach Currier are going to be my first two selections overall, regardless of position. So he's going to be in the game. He's one of the reserves, so that's awesome to see. Obviously, he's one of those guys who's goal numbers don't tell the full story. You have to look at the complete stat line all the way from left to right to see what Zach Currier does for the game, and that doesn't even really paint the full picture of how much he impacts a game and how much he impacts a team. So there's a lot of snubs, a lot of guys that we're talking about, like, oh, I don't understand why the fans voted them. But I think my follow-up question to that is, does this matter? Does it matter that it's not necessarily the best guys who are the starting all-stars? What is an all-star game supposed to be? Is it supposed to mean anything, or is it supposed to just be fun? Is it supposed to just engage fans in some way? I don't know. I don't know if there's a right answer to that, but we'll go around the room and talk about it. Dan.
Yeah, so the first question you asked me was, what was my initial reaction, which is that it's going to be fun. It's going to be a ton of fun to watch. You know, a lot of the sport's biggest names and biggest personalities are going to be there. And PLL does such a good job with their production and broadcast team and all that, that, you know, all the mic'd up is going to be really entertaining. And, like, it's going to be a ton of fun. And I think that we can pretty much just bank on that, which, you know, as a fan is obviously really exciting.
Rosie.
Yeah, so my personal approach is twofold. You know, I want players who accomplish a lot through the season, but I also do want players who are entertaining to watch. So I don't think it's going to be a disappointing game or anything like that. You know, they have very talented players. But, and you know, I think the reserves is kind of a good way to, you know, fill in the cracks, you know, some players who, like, you know, we'll let the fans do their thing, but okay, here's some guys who should definitely be there regardless of, you know, not having a catchphrase or something like that. These guys are still really good, so we need to get them out to San Jose. So, yeah, I mean, it's still going to be a good game, still going to be entertaining and fun. Does it matter? That's a really good question. I'm not entirely sure. I wrote a little bit about this. Like, if we use these things on resumes, and I think sports talk inherently does, I think I can't envision down the road where it would matter, where people say, you know, this guy's a five-time All-Star, but I don't know how much that's going to mean if the All-Star determination is, you know, if kids like you more than somebody who's, you know, doing much better than you are. So I don't know how much it is going to matter in that regard.
Are you disappointed that to the readers of Inside the Cross to vote a D-Mitty onto the team did not pan out?
Not going to lie, a little bit. I didn't anticipate it actually happening, though. I thought it would have been cool to get somebody in there. Just kind of like a, you know, just kind of, hey, just an acknowledgement, you know. You do a little bit of the dirty work. You're not going to get the biggest numbers. Those guys usually aren't, like, mic'd up, or they don't really have the catchphrases or anything like that. They don't have the wacky ad campaigns behind them. So, you know, I didn't think they had a great chance coming in, you know, seeing that they're only allowed six midfielders and, you know, offensive guys, long sticks, whoever you pick. I figured they wouldn't make it in. So
who did you think had the best chance to get the vote?
I think the person who had the best chance is probably like Matt Abbott. I don't know how many PLL fans are that familiar with his work, though. You know, I'm not sure what percentage of the PLL fan base is guys who watched MLL. So, you know, all the MLL fans know Matt Abbott, of course, but I don't know how many of those guys voted versus, you know, if it's a million voters who were all just started watching pro lacrosse 2 years ago, they don't really know him at. So I don't know, but I thought he had a pretty good shot at it.
Matt Evans, Ryan Tarafenko, both not on either team.
Yeah. And
Tarafenko has been on a tear as of late.
Yeah, his past two games have been incredible. And, you know, I mean, two really good games is enough to get you in. It's a short season, and, you know, players have, especially, you know, with the border issues, you know, some players like Jeff Teague's got three games under his belt, you know. It's not a ton of games for these rookies, but, you know, if you're going to be a rookie short stick, you know, the deck's pretty stacked against you.
And Danny Logan has had a great year, but Tarafenko in the last few games, I just feel like, has made a really, really strong case.
Yeah.
Kevin, what's your thought on just the overall outlook about All-Star games?
Yeah, before we finish the shorty defensive midfielder talk, I mean, it was a great week to be a D-mid, I feel like. Everyone was getting hyped up with Tarafenko and Danny Logan and Will Hawes. Those guys are animals. And I feel like Dominique Alexander got voted in by his peers. The players voted for the reserve roster just because of how much he chirps. And maybe that'll add a extra element to the All-Star proceedings. But that's what you want. And to the overall question, it's a entertaining event. It's not like for any playoff ramifications or anything. You want to see Lyle Thompson hit backhanders. You want to see, I mean, a guy who maybe isn't a star player anymore, but he still has a role in the Archers' offense, is Connor Fields. Maybe interesting that the fans aren't kind of on his bandwagon anymore, but this is the exact element where he would make out some awesome plays, you know. The first year we had it, first and only All-Star game in the Premier Lacrosse League we've had, there was really only one big highlight of that Rabel around the world. So hopefully we get more of those this season. But it'll be interesting to see, you know, how serious they take it from the onset.
That's actually a really awesome scenario that I wish would have played out, would be Connor Fields and Lyle Thompson playing together in the All-Star game. You know,
doing
as much of the reuniting as you can of former players, or, you know, Grant passing to Mac O'Keefe would have been another, you know, just awesome scenario to try to manufacture in the All-Star game.
That's only a matter of time until that happens.
Yeah.
Right. We'll see that next year.
For sure. All-Star games, like, do you guys watch them? Like, in whatever sports that you follow, like, is it something that you even watch or really, like, pay attention to?
Everything except for the Pro Bowl. I don't watch the Pro Bowl in the NFL. I don't know, for whatever reason, I can't get behind that.
I watch, yeah, I'm the same way, but I do like watching, like, the lead-up to the Pro Bowl, like, the skills competitions.
That is more entertaining than the actual game, 1,000%.
Even seeing them, like, whiff on dodgeballs.
I also really like the skills competition in the NBA.
Yeah. So they've got the skills competition before the All-Star game this year. I think we can get pretty excited about that.
Do we know if there's any incentive for the winning team of the All-Star game?
I don't think so, but I imagine there is for the skills competition winners.
Yeah, for winning those events. Yeah.
Which was the beginning of the end for MLL, was the skills competition where Zach Doran went in there and won the fastest shot competition. That was, if there's like a demarcation line of like when the MLL started to kind of go on a downswing, I think it was that. Like basically having, you know, the equivalent of a long drive contestant coming out there and showing up all of the pros for a brand's documentary that they do was just one of those moments that was like, oh no, this is like the erosion of the player versus the management really kind of took a new level at that point. But the only All-Star, like, you know, I'm trying to think of memories that I have of All-Star games, and it's tough to think of anything. I'm not an NBA guy, so I know there's a lot that I'm missing there, but I remember the All-Star game being at Camden Yards when Camden Yards opened. I don't remember anything about the game, just that there was a big to-do about it being in Baltimore. And I also remember Cal Ripken's final All-Star game, him hitting a home run, which is going to be kind of the Kyle Harrison treatment this time. Kyle Harrison's going to have 4 goals. Other than that, I can think of the NHL skills competition, Al Iafrady and his hardest shot for the Caps. I know I'm dating a lot of you guys here with that one, but the mullet and that just big left-handed slap shot was just insane to watch. But there's nothing from any like NHL All-Star game that I remember actually happening on the ice. Skills competition was a little more entertaining. I remember the Capitals used to do where they had the team would do their own like skills competition at the arena that was in Landover back in the day. They would do like for the fans, just like the Capitals would do the skills competition leading up to the All-Star game. I went to one of those when I was little, but that's my only real memory. So, but they're fun in the sense that they're good TV, but it's just one of those things that kind of comes and goes. Like, I'd rather watch it than a lot of other stuff that's going to be on TV next weekend. But I don't think I'm going to remember it Monday morning.
Yeah, I feel like it's different. Like, hockey, it's a lot tougher to pull off some of those skill moves, maybe, or you're like going in between your legs and ripping it top shelf. But there's been some great moments from MLS All-Star game history. Like, think back on the Mikey Powell skill competitions, and even when Rabel first broke the miles per hour record, what was it, like 110 at the time, before the Zach Doran days.
Joey Spallina coming out there with Steven Berger.
Jeez, that's right.
Future PLL like star.
Or something, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was – there's been no lacrosse player who has been in the spotlight. He's had a longer career in the spotlight than most pro players, and he's still in high school.
Because him out there with the young guns. I think we're – because just to – I don't want to derail the subject, but talking about formats that will make it more intriguing and stuff. MLL had a couple of years, the old guns versus the young guns, which I thought would have been perfect. I think Kyle Devitt was one of the first on that bandwagon, because this is one of the best rookie classes, sophomore classes. I think he grouped those two together, and you put a pretty awesome all-star team together, and then battle it out against a Kyle Harrison-led veteran group, which is probably – pretty star-laden, and you got a pretty enticing game there. Any other ideas?
I like that one. Particularly this year with Kyle retiring, it would be nice to have him leading the veteran team and, you know, seeing if they can beat the young guy. And as Chris wrote, you know, it's an iconic rookie class, so to speak, of PLL stars. You know, the freshman class is pretty awesome. So all the young guys are really good. I have an outside-the-box idea that it might not even really be an All-Star game anymore, what I'm thinking of. You combine the PLL All-Star game and the USILA North-South game. The North-South game, I feel like, has lost a lot of luster. It's one of those things that has a lot of tradition. Jim Brown played in it. It's, you know, a who's who of kind of those old college lacrosse stars have been a part of the North-South game, and it was such a prestigious thing to get selected to it back in its day. When the PLL is doing training camp, it's a preseason All-Star game. They should have a fan vote of picking a team of PLL players to play against the college All-Stars. So it could be the outgoing seniors of the college game play against the PLL All-Stars.
That is outside the box.
I like it. So it's not just rookies. It's – like Connor Schellenberger and Brendan O'Neill can play in the game?
I don't know. I haven't thought it through that much. But the North-South game is all seniors who are graduating. So if you just limit it to seniors, and I guess it would be probably during Memorial Day weekend is when you would do it, because that's when training camp is going on.
Right.
So it wouldn't be the guys who are in the Final Four, so to speak. But you do the seniors, and they get one last go. And it's kind of a, you know, maybe it's a little bit of a preview.
Like a trial.
Yeah. Of, you know, what the player pool can be for the guys who weren't drafted. I don't know. It's something to revive the North-South game, which has a lot of tradition and is a special event in itself, but I don't think it's gotten the attention that maybe it deserves over the past few years, and do something different, because the college game is so popular, and that's a way to capitalize off of the popularity of college's biggest moment and parlay that into the PLL season. Granted, it's not a true All-Star game because they haven't played a minute at that point, so you're speculating on who you think the best players will be, or but if it's a fan vote, it doesn't matter anyway. So you just kind of go with it.
Could do the vote at the end of the year, at the end of the previous year.
Or you include all the award winners and then fill out the team from there. You know, let the MVP pick the team. The MVP from the previous year picks his All-Star team. And he has to pick so many guys from each team so he doesn't just pick his own teammates.
Yeah.
Televise it, naturally.
Yeah.
All right, well, while you have all these outside-the-box thoughts, here's a question for you. If the PLL did a celebrity game, who would be the celebrity you most would be intrigued to watch play?
A celebrity is playing pro lacrosse?
Well, so you know how in the NBA they do like a celebrity.
Oh, like the Rock and Jock kind of thing? Or
yeah. Who would you be excited to see?
Ooh. Well, I feel like there has to be some level of like they had to play lacrosse at some
point. Yeah.
Because anyone can like.
You want to see him pass.
I don't say anyone can take up a
basketball. You can throw basically anybody on a basketball court and hope that they can catch and throw the basketball enough to run up and down. It doesn't necessarily work 100% for lacrosse. There has to be some level of previous competence.
Right. If I threw you a basketball, I would assume you could catch the basketball.
If that's the case, I got to go with Mankind, Mick Foley. He played lacrosse, I believe he did, back on Long Island.
Yeah.
He could maybe, you know, it could be like kind of a hardcore.
Maybe we should come up with a list and pitch this. Maybe Dave we should Grohl. Cut this part so nobody else steals this from us.
Did Steve Nash play? I know he joined the Vegas group with Josiah and Dustin.
Yeah, he played.
Wayne Gretzky.
Wayne Gretzky.
Played Club for Edge.
I think picking an athlete from another sport is unfair, though. Even though I picked Mick Foley, who is one of the premier athletes in the world.
Sure.
Peter Dante.
Yeah.
He would be interesting.
Yeah,
there are like a few actors that have played.
I said the Rock and Jock, but they're like, so the NBA actually did this like for the All-Star game.
Yeah, I had no idea what that meant. I just went with it.
Oh, that was your wow.
Yeah, I was gonna say you were worried about making yourself before, Matt. The Rock and Jock thing definitely.
No idea what the Rock.
Okay, back in the day when MTV was still. Music television to some extent, but like when they were transitioning out of that, I guess they did Rock and Jock Basketball, where it was exactly what it sounds like. Like they had a team of athletes. I don't think they were basketball players, but they were athletes from other sports, or maybe retired basketball players or something, versus musicians who had played basketball. So Jeff Ament from Pearl Jam played basketball in college and is really good. And I remember he was like one of the stars of Rock and Jock Basketball when they did it. I'm really aging myself here. I'm just going to add some more references.
Yeah, you would have that.
Talk about the Pixies for the next 10 minutes.
Their Friday night special, like they had the celebrity game and like the up and coming game after that. And like in the celebrity game, you'd have like a bunch of rappers and that Arnie Duncan guy would always play from the Department of Education. But yeah, it'd be interesting to go through and actually like list out all the celebrities. But back to your format question, maybe because tying into college and tying into more like conference based with their, because everyone still has these school identities playing against each other. If we do like a full ACC team versus ACC versus the world, which it would be interesting.
ACC and Big Ten versus the world, maybe. Although that's probably how many. What percentage of the league is that?
I'd rather see them battle it, though.
You'd rather see ACC versus Big Ten?
No, I'd rather see ACC versus ACC. But or also ACC versus Big Ten.
How many D3, D2 guys are there? Not enough to field a team, obviously.
Not enough to field a team, but we could find some sort of way to get them all on the same team.
Yeah, at least get a shift in there of all D3 guys and D2 guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think they'd be interested in dividing it up not by school but by where the people are from? Or do you think, like, they by the time they reach the pro level, they've kind of squashed that sort of beef? Like, you put all the New Yorkers on one team.
No, I love that idea.
Yeah. That beef never goes away.
Last
okay.
I feel like those club rivalries last longer than the college and high school ones.
Sure.
Like, I bet you had players out there chirping about Dukes back in the day. You know, like, I feel like that stuff goes pretty deep. Those are such formative years, and you spend so much time with, like, traveling and eating meals and doing, like, stuff on the road with those guys that I feel like those relationships last. You could do, like, a Long Island, Baltimore versus everyone else or something like that.
No, we need them playing against each other.
But the fun thing is that you need one team that feels like derided and has something to prove.
Give me Long Island and Upstate versus
just the state of New York versus everyone else.
New York versus everybody else.
That might be it.
Yeah. How many Upstate guys? I mean, there's probably more Upstate guys than Long Island guys. That they were throwing out there for ahead of the Hofstra event was pretty ridiculous, how many Long Island guys are in the league.
Yeah. An all-New York team would be absolutely ridiculous. So that would be fun to watch. Sign me up.
But would they necessarily win? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm looking at the all-star list right now. You know, they've got some good guys. Not going to lie. But everybody else, you know, they've got, you know, Perkovic and Miles Jones. They got some offense. Grant Amant leads the everybody else squad from attack.
You still got Grant Amant and Matt Rambo on attack for the everyone else squad.
Mm-hmm. Pullman subbing in there for everybody else.
I'm interested to see how these guys draft because it's Ament versus Team Reardon, right? And Ament's obviously going to take all his fellow archers. Same with Blaze and the Chaos, although there's really only what?
And they make sure he has to make a lot of saves. He might not take
some. I don't know if he's talking to them right now.
Taking a break after.
He's like, every time we win, I have 25 saves. Come on, guys. Like.
Right.
Poor
some other defenders.
Well, let's talk about the teams right now. So, Long Island, like we said, it's contentious after Long Island. I think the big news coming out of the weekend, two things. First was the parity that is now pretty clear that there's not this one or two teams on the top and then everyone else. It's more balanced than maybe we thought. The second was the fight, the skirmish, the scuffle, whatever you want to call it, that Paul Rabel was involved in, obviously the co-founder of the league. So that adds another layer of complexity to that. You know, we all watched the video, obviously, like everyone else on Wax Twitter who was talking about it for the past week. And there were fines laid out with Bell, with Rowlett, and with Rabel. Stuff just gets crazy on Long Island. That's just what happens. People get testy over there.
Well, there's also a third biggest thing of the weekend is Rabel retaking the points record for field.
Yes. Well, that was expected. That was going to happen. Tweet that said it was the pro lacrosse record and the ensuing reaction from Lax Twitter became a bigger story than the actual record.
Right.
So
where did you guys fall on that? Did you read that and think like,
oh, so stupid.
What the heck? Or did you read that and think like nothing of it?
No, it was so dumb. like, obviously they're talking about Field. It's the PLL. It's, I don't know. I think
Rosie looks like he disagrees.
No. I didn't understand all the sort of, you know, the anger at which the people needed or demanded a clarification. You know, I mean, I feel like, you know, I don't know what the PLL was going to call it unless they were going to be like, you know, hey, congratulations to the number one scorer in professional field lacrosse amongst these two leagues combined, you know, or something like that. You know, I don't think they necessarily meant any sort of animosity towards the NLL by calling it pro lacrosse. I think this is just a problem they're going to encounter. You know what I mean? It's like they're calling it the Pro Lacrosse Hall of Fame that they have. You know, that disqualifies the NLL. It disqualifies any sort of professional lacrosse leagues other than their own and the MLL. I don't have a better word for it, you know? So I'm not mad at them for calling it pro lacrosse. I understand that, you know, NLL people get mad about it, but I also understand that the scoring is different, right? Like, it's different to score a goal indoor and outdoor. There's a different amounts of scoring done. So, you know, obviously if you played both your entire career like John Grant Jr. and you're as good as John Grant Jr., you're going to have more points. You know, I get that. I don't think there was a need to specifically clarify what they were talking about every time. But every tweet, you'd see people underneath it saying, you know, Junior's got more points if you combine multiple leagues. I don't know. It just seemed unnecessary to me, right? You got to pick different things to get mad about, in my opinion.
Well, that sums up life right there. Like,
right. Yeah, 100%. Did you see the Lax Sports Network's Travis Eldridge tweeted out the video of John Grant Jr. and he just showed up at some random men's league game and under behind his back, underneath, I don't know what you call that shot, a one-hander behind his back, low to high shot.
Right, from, like, his Achilles tendon. Like,
yeah, from, like, a severe angle, which, obviously, we got used to seeing in the Denver days, but he still got it, so never count him out from retiring.
I would love to see this be a theme that happens, is, like, Grant just keeps unretiring every time that Rabel breaks the record and just comes back and scores and then retires again and then just keep doing that over and over again.
We just need to officially launch the celebrity game and have him play in that every game.
It's like he just gets really mad every time Rabel scores some goals. And he just, I took that personally. And he comes out of retirement and scores some more of his own.
Well, it's a fun. He just go and show up and crush everybody once a year in the celebrity PLL game.
It's a fellow Blue Jay now, though.
Yep.
Can't be too much animosity between the two. You can't be the assistant coach at Johns Hopkins and be having a beef with Paul Rabel.
So true.
Let me ask you guys this, because I was wondering about that, the scoring record. First of all, do you think there's anyone playing now who could approach or break the record? And second, do you think it's reasonable that they combine MLL and PLL scoring for the record? I understand why you would do it. They've got combined history, but you score a lot differently in PLL. Like, we're talking, like, Rob Pinnell used to have, like, 70-point seasons in MLL, and we're not getting anything like that right now in PLL, you know?
I think that combining the MLL and PLL is wise and good. I would think that the numbers, it's like, to me, it's like the NHL had its dead ball era, where there was no goal scored, basically. And, you know, there's going to be fluctuations over time between – but it's still the same sport. So I think it makes sense, and I think it is a good olive branch to the sport's pro field history, given that so many – basically everyone, besides a very select few of the guys from, you know, the last 2 years, everyone, because, you know, even those guys grew up watching MLL and – want aspiring to play pro lacrosse based on that. So I think it works as the continuation of that history is the right thing for the sport overall.
Right.
Yeah, because you're dead on with the the points that they would put up in the MLO seasons were a lot higher. And just seeing, like, Joe Walters up there, and because his game never really seemed like he was breaking any records or anything, but he would consistently put up these seasons where he's just casually putting up 40 points. But, yeah, I think if – yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
It's probably best to just combine
it. If there's one person I had to bet that had a chance to go and break that record right now that's playing in the league, I would pick Grant Amant. I think that he's just got an ability right now that he can go by you and score, or he can go by you, and if you decide to slide, that he can just make you pay. That the way he plays and with the makeup of the roster around him, he's set up to have a long career where he can score, where he's going to be able to put up a whole ton of points. That would be my number one guess right now.
I think I'd agree, and my reason is a little different. It's the same, but it's also adding to that, I guess, is he wants to be a pro. He wants to be a full-time pro lacrosse person. He's very driven in that goal. So that's half the battle, I guess, in the sense that there's guys who this is something that, you know, when they're looking at their career path, they're planning to do 5 years and transition to something else, transition out, so to speak. I don't necessarily get that vibe from Grant. I think he's in it for as long of a haul as he can make it to be in terms of playing lacrosse full-time, and his other part of his career is going to be supplemented by coaching and clinics and the like. So he's going to be a full-time lacrosse person. So I think that's a big part of the equation there. There's a reason Paul Rabel is that guy, is because he is a full-time lacrosse person. And that's why he's been able to do that. Same with John Grant. You know, I don't know if Grant gets credit enough for being this guy who has made a whole career. He maybe wasn't the face in the U.S. as much as Paul was in terms of, you know, being the marketed athlete. But he's been a full-time lacrosse player since he graduated. And it's really super impressive how long he's done it. You know, this is a complete tangent. But John Grant Jr. is an amazing coach. When he was hired at Johns Hopkins, I feel like some people kind of took the approach of, like, is this a little bit of a gimmicky hire for Johns Hopkins? But the only reason that he hasn't been in the coaching circuit for so long is because he's been such a good player for so long, and he plays both leagues, and he just never has time. You know, his job has been for the past 20 years, 21 years, to score goals. And that's what he did full time. And now that time has passed, he's kind of going into this coaching part of his career. I don't think people realize how good of a coach he is. I've interacted with him enough and been with enough people who have been kind of coached and mentored by him to know that he is an exceptional coach. So he's going to have a long career as a coach as well. But again, this is nothing about what we're talking about. It's just a complete tangent about John Grant Jr. because he is probably – he's in my top three in terms of all-time favorite players.
Junior. One thing Junior is not unaccustomed to is the box-style fighting, if you want to get into that kind of subject with Rowlett, Rabel, and Bell. Overall, just so many fights on Long Island.
It's like, yeah.
Take it easy, man. But, the helmet throw obviously was going to get a fine and some attention. Throw/toss, like we said before the pod.
Yeah, I think throw is a strong word.
Right.
This would be a much different conversation if he baseball style threw a helmet at someone.
Yeah.
Granted, that video angle, it's tough to tell what the heck is going on. But I didn't see, like...
It definitely wasn't a, here you go, here's your helmet back toss, but it definitely wasn't, let me smash your face toss.
Right. The intent to injure, I guess, is the difference there.
It was no Myles Garrett incident.
Yeah. But granted, I do wonder if a game suspension was the better play there, as opposed to the fine. Mostly because of the fine, given the way that the league doesn't share the information about the fines, it doesn't, there's not a good indicator of like who they perceived at fault in that situation.
Plus, do you assume that a fine is less than a game check?
Because if so, I don't know that. Yeah.
And do you also
the difference like suspended, which is fine.
Well, I think losing a game and the ensuing game check, even if the fine is more than a game, I think losing the game at a game check is a much more severe situation. And
especially if there's incentives baked in, like if they are able to hit so many points or so on and so forth, then missing a game is really impactful. So I take back my previous statement.
But again, I don't think it was that malicious. I do think that there has to be repercussions for it. It's tough. The thing that's tough is just that there's so few games. So a game is a really significant portion of the season.
Sure.
I don't, there's not really a good answer to it besides having more transparency about what the fine is, and if there's any way to, you know, I remember when, I'm using an NHL analogy, even though nobody cares about NHL except for me, when Brendan Shanahan was the head of discipline, he used to do these videos basically explaining why someone got penalized. Did they get Seth Tierney up there and do a video basically explaining the structure of the penalties that were doled out, why they did that, what is the precedent that means for the next fine? Because right now, the next incident. Because right now, I don't know if there's a fight and someone throws a punch in the next game, connects with someone, you know, bare fist or with a glove. I don't know what the remedy is. I don't know what the punishment should be because I don't have a clear line of demarcation of like what the structure of penalizations are.
It's also kind of hard to tell what is and isn't allowed. Like they always, like they claim that fighting is allowed and they claim that that's kind of okay. Like, but then obviously there's a line. And so it just kind of gets tough.
Did Ocello get suspended when he punched? Well, I guess Blaze still had his helmet on that first season.
Yeah.
After the fact, but yeah, it is interesting. Lost my train of thought.
Yeah, get Seth Tierney. Seth Tierney's great on explaining those things. Get him out there to explain, this is what we saw, this is who instigated it, and this is why, you know, this is a repeat offender, this is, et cetera. This is the reasons why we doled out this punishment. I think it would be great.
Get in front of it and explain it a little bit. Because, yeah, all we have now is three guys were all assessed fines of, you know, are they the same fines? Are they guilty of the same sort of thing? You know, I know it said Rowlett was fined for contact with an official. So I'm guessing maybe he like pushed a ref, you know, when he was, I don't even know when it happened, but so maybe he bumped or pushed a ref. So he gets a fine. Okay. That makes sense. You don't want the refs getting shoved around. Tyson Bell got a fine for, they said unsportsmanlike conduct, and Paul Rabil also got a fine for unsportsmanlike conduct. Did they do similar things? Like, if we're just calling it unsportsmanlike conduct, you know, are they similar fines and are they similar crimes, I guess, you know? I mean, it's basically like they put it out and then they just kind of said, don't worry about it. And then we're just going to, I guess, move on to next week. And, I mean, who knows? I don't know what it means to fine somebody in this league, you know? Like, you know, is it proportionate to their salary? You know, I mean, I can imagine a Tyson Bell fine hits a little different than a Paul Rabil fine. You know, I don't know their game day checks, but I guess they're different. So, you know, I don't know. I think maybe they're just banking on people not really caring that much about these things. You know, next week we'll be in Minnesota and we'll be talking about stuff that happens in Minnesota. And I think that's just kind of the strategy they use on these matters.
And they're probably correct.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's going to prove them exactly correct. We're going to say, you know, don't worry about it. That's your answer, you know, and we'll be like, well, why don't you tell us what Paul Rabil did? And they're going to say, well, how about we don't?
How about we look at this awesome highlight from Grand Anna?
Right.
If there's anything, it's Lax Twitter has a short attention span. That's for sure.
Right. The PLL is well aware how the internet works. Yeah.
Put a high on falling down after a split dodge. And...
Yeah, they said, hey, gang, what do you think about these all-star rosters? And don't get us started. And then everybody's just going to yell about it. Like, you go look on Instagram, and all their comments are just, like, people mad about who did and didn't get picked. So, you know, they're fine. They can just keep it moving most of the time.
Yeah, this was – the All-Star was just – it's a giant deep fake for covering up for the people talking about the Paul Rabo situation. They're like, all right, let's put Newman as one of the fans. And people are going to stop talking about the fight that happened.
That's right. Keep it moving. And they're right. You know, if that was their strategy, you know, hats off to them. It worked perfectly. Like, a guy got his finger bit, and we were talking about something else like 3 days later. It doesn't matter.
Nope. It's a
bad so Long Island was like the, you know, the contentious fights. So we're going to Minnesota. Is it going to just be like everyone's friendly to each other and shaking their hands?
I think home would already hit the wholesome feel. We got that with the K18 standing ovation and all that at Homewood. So maybe mysterious Minneapolis.
We don't know. People like signs saying, like, I hope everyone has fun. Yeah. Like, both teams play well.
Drove 14 hours to see everybody smile.
The Minnesota is one of the – I'm really excited for that. My wife – was born in Minnesota, and most of her family is out there. I've been out there many times. Minneapolis also is like a sneaky, awesome city. I would suggest everyone go there and visit it. But I kind of think that this is going to be like one of those awesome crowds that we're going to like see this on TV and just be super impressed by the way that the Minnesota folk come out there.
Well, I think it's kind of we experienced this in – where were they? I want to say Indiana. It was a Midwest college game. Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. A few years ago, you know, they packed the place because they hadn't seen that kind of talent come through there previously, and they didn't know when they were going to get them again. So, you know, if you have any interest in the sport, you have to show up. You know what I mean? Like, if you live in Towson, maybe you don't go to Homewood. You know, if you're, you know, if there's something going on there, you know, you'll catch a Loyola game some other time or something like that, or a Towson game or whatever. You don't have to drive however far it is to get to
or the Philly or DC playoff games, right?
Right. Yeah. There's other things you can do. You know what I mean? But like, if you're in Minnesota, if you live an hour away from this stadium, you know, maybe make that drive because, you know, it's not going to get closer to your house probably, you know?
Yeah,
I think cities like that really tend to show up for these sort of kind of the big event feel that I think they go for in this touring model.
Yeah, and they it's just a growing area. There's some really good college level talent that have come out that has come out of Minnesota. So it's kind of like hitting it from the grassroots level, but also from the star player level out there. They had the NLL with the Minnesota Swarm. You know, I know from my wife's cousin's kids, they were like upset when the Swarm left. There was a following out there. There's people who really appreciated it and are playing lacrosse because they saw the Swarm and because that they know that, you know, the sport's just on the upswing up there. So, you know, it's one of those things where I'm really excited to see the crowd. And I actually had a conversation with my uncle this weekend about — he's not a lacrosse guy. He's, you know, his lacrosse exposure is basically through me and random people he talks to that bring it up or whatever. And he was saying about how watching the NCAA championship, how it looks so bad on TV because of all the empty seats, and about how he said Homewood should host it every year is what he said to me. And I think that I think he's downplaying how many people they can pack into the NCAA championship. But I think his overall point is right about you need the right environment for the TV product to look really good. And I think we might be seeing that this weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it's a preview for what we're seeing for an NCAA quarterfinal or something. You know, an area that's, like you said, Indianapolis was a really successful quarterfinal. And maybe Minnesota's next in 4 years or whatever when the next big process is, because they're all set through 2026, I think.
Big homecoming game for Ryan McNamara, too.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Yeah.
He's playing in an exciting game. Looking up pictures of TCO Stadium, looks pretty nice. It does look like one of those mid-sized Homewood Field stadiums that'll definitely play well on the broadcast, like you said. And this is what the tour-based model is all about, trying to untap these or trying to get these untapped markets to show out and grow the game. So, two straight hotbeds and now Minnesota. Definitely exciting. Two of my favorite games of the season for the All-Star break, I think, are going to be this weekend. Can you guys guess what those are going to be?
Wait, two of your favorite games are going to be this coming weekend?
Yes.
Hmm.
All the build-up.
After having Archers and Whipsnakes last week, that's quite the statement.
Yeah, because that one was awesome. But
I think Atlas Chaos is one you're thinking of.
One for that. Woods Whipsnakes always brings it.
I'm kind of tired of that game.
What?
I feel like it's been like... I don't know, like... Maybe it's just because there's 8 Redwoods on the All-Star game. I'm just kind of like, all right, we get it.
All right, you're overhyped. No.
Yeah.
No. It's going to be great.
The Atlas, though, are... I guess let's kind of talk about next week. But we'll go around the horn again. And a team that... What's the most interesting team going into this week? That's how I'll pose the question. And Kevin, Dan, you're gonna go. You're jumping at it, so go for it. Dive in.
I would say it has to be the Archers after last weekend. It just feels like, you know, they're in a situation where they need to kind of rebound and relook at what's going on, and you know. They were so hot going into last weekend to come out so cold. Feels like kind of a situation where they need to look in the mirror and just figure out exactly what they need to address. And they have to wait till Sunday to do it. But, you know, they get that opportunity.
To be fair, they took the Whipsnakes to a one-goal game.
Very
tight. Yes. So,
right. That could have gone either way. I think
that one goes either. Could have, exactly.
They were just amazing on Friday night defensively.
Yeah, and Galloway got hot.
Shorty, love. But, yeah, that's my second game of the week. It's going to be so awesome seeing the Cannons and Archers, because you think of the ramifications for the Cannons. And I think the Archers are a team where they're more self-assured and confident in their game plan and overall identity, whereas the Cannons, a lot of doubts creeping in with – 1-4 now, or two straight losses, coming off your ugliest loss of the season, because the three previous losses were all by one goal each. They're a great team. They have it all together. Just the last 2 weeks, Lyle Thompson's produced one combined goal. We should maybe see what's going on there. Defensively, they're giving up a lot of goals per game. That's not going to change against the Archers. Mark it in your calendar, 7:30 p.m., NBC Sports Network, and, of course, on Peacock, Sunday night, Cannons Archers.
The Cannons, I think, are definitely the most interesting team, because playing two games this weekend, it feels like this is – I know that all but one team makes the playoffs, so I think it's another discussion, because I don't know – I don't necessarily think it's the right format for this year, but – you lose two games, and it feels, even though you will still mathematically have a very, like, decent shot over the ensuing, you know, 3 weeks of – or 2 weeks of gameplay to get back into it, you lose these two games, and it feels like it's done for them. It at least feels like even if they make the playoffs, they aren't going to win a game in the playoffs, which the Cannons, you know, they're the third best goal differential – in the league right now. They're minus one, which is exactly – they're basically playing even lacrosse with everyone in terms of goal differential. They just cannot win. And at some point, that's got to just be – that's just got to take control in terms of we're not a winning team. And that's got to become your identity for the rest of the season. And I think if you lose 2-1 weekend this weekend, and you have to – sorry, Cannons fans, you kind of have to assume that Sunday is a loss, right? Against the Archers? You're not going – you're – you can't assume that if you're a Cannons player, but I think the rest of the world is going to assume that the Archers are winning that game handily.
That's what the rest of the world assumed about the Chrome 2 weeks ago.
This is very true. This is why the first thing we said here about parity coming out of last weekend. So we've all been wrong the entire season. Why would we be wrong again? But the Cannons are for sure the most interesting team going into this weekend.
Yeah, their backs are against the wall heading into this weekend. I mean, so say, just, you know, pulling on that string, say they do lose both of these games. That would be, first of all, a loss to the Water Dogs, the one team they've already beaten. So now they're not beating the team they knew they could beat. And then if they beat the Archers, so that's two losses there. And then they have this all-star break where they just got to, like, let all that losing marinate. You know what I mean? And they're just kind of soaking in losing for this whole time. I feel like it could be tough to kind of, you know, get the gears back going for a second half if you finish that poorly heading into the break. You know, especially, you know, I'm sure they didn't anticipate the season playing out the way that it has so far, right? So it's just a lot of disappointment. You know, if they salvage one of these, you know, if they did beat the Water Dogs again, I think they could kind of use that as, you know, okay, we're doing some things well and kind of use that as some sort of fuel. Obviously, if they win both of the games, they're going to feel like they're right back in it. So, yeah, this is a huge, huge weekend for them.
The structure of the season is interesting in the sense that from the game Sunday until the next game of actual play, so not including the All-Star game, it's a 19-day layover. So if you're playing in the All-Star game, at least you're getting out there, you're doing the travel, you're getting your legs under you or whatever. But if you're not playing the All-Star game, that's a long time. Then after that, there's another week break after the games in Colorado before the final week of the season that's going to be at UAlbany. So that's another 12 days of between games there. So that's a big – you're only going to have one game in the span of 30-some days. That's a long, like, I don't know how you kind of keep momentum going there.
Which might be the reset a team like the Cannons need.
Yeah.
Hopefully, like, if you're a Cannons fan, hopefully they split this weekend. I wrote about it when I did the feature on the Chrome. They just needed the bye week to kind of get themselves together, heal some of those emotional bonds and wounds they had to Jordan Wolf and some of those guys. So Randy Stotts, obviously. But, yeah, so it can go both ways. You saw Virginia have that, like, four-week layoff before the playoffs, and they end up winning the championship for D1. So
they get to practice every day, though, still.
Right, that's the biggest difference.
Yeah, I don't know if there's opportunities to, you know, do a fly-in weekend practice or something. I doubt there are, but yeah. It's a long time to kind of go between the contact with the team, and that's where your team leaders come in, and that's probably a good parlay into the Chrome, because I wrote it in the power rankings this week that Tim Sudan's teams just, they all seem to like each other a lot more than any other team. It's been a theme with the Rattlers forever, that even when they are at their best and at their worst, they always seem to be the most unified as a team. There were pictures of him hosting the cookout in the parking lot or whatever at the games this past weekend. Just what a guy. What a guy he is in terms of his pro coaching is exactly the kind of what you need for a pro coach. These are grown men, not like they're not boys. Like you kind of got to treat them like grown men, and you got to find ways that they all respect each other and become a team in a situation where it's very difficult to foster that environment.
Yeah, he's definitely been, as far as like pro lacrosse coaches go, kind of the go-to example for a player's coach, you know, like a guy who everyone seems to really enjoy playing for. Like you mentioned with the Rattlers, they've always just had this history of, you know, like you said, group barbecues, group chats, where they all seem, you know, I'm guessing there's some guys who just, you know, aren't as social as some other guys, but the whole team really seem to carry themselves like, you know, like a pack where they're just all in it for each other and they genuinely enjoy being around each other. And I think the more you hear from them, the more kind of shines lights on teams where that's not necessarily the case. You know what I mean? Because it's a job, you know, and you get drafted and you get traded and, you know, there's certainly no guarantee you're going to like everybody you work with or play with or whatever, but it seems to work out pretty well for Tin City Ants teams.
Yeah, and Stagnita is such a, like, it's such a different approach, but also, like, equally as effective, I feel like, with him, in the sense that, you know, I definitely think he's still a player's coach, so to speak, but a little more of the authoritative figure that the players just respect his authority in a way, as opposed to Sudan, who feels like it's a little more player-led, and he fosters an environment that allows, like, a player like John Rannigan or John Galloway to kind of take charge of the team. But continuing kind of talking about each team here, Chaos. I have been pretty critical of them in terms of it didn't feel like a roster that was constructed to be successful. But what has changed with them that has made them now firmly kind of in the middle of this pack of all the teams that are kind of on an equal playing field? They're right there with everyone else.
Yeah, I think – I don't know if I would put them on a tier. Like, it's hard because I flip back and forth between that and saying they're like on a tier right below everyone else. They still have to prove for some reason, even though they've won two straight. But – they still have to prove it against this Atlas team, who's also on two straight. And you had, we had second in our power rankings this week. I think for how much crap we give Jared Newman, he has played pretty well over the past few weeks. Held Rob Pinnell pretty quiet, although he got some assists. And then did ball off ball and kind of up in some up top roles while Jack Rowlett's taking that number one cover role. I think their shorty, their D-mid games have been a lot better recently. That's mainly due because their approaches haven't been just flying past a guy like they have maybe in the first 2 weeks. But Blaze, again, is going to bail you out on most of those defensive possessions, and that's what he's been doing. So it's come down to the offensive end, and I think Josh Burns kind of found his footing. He's looked more fluid. There's been a lot more O'Keefe picks above GLE to free others up. So he takes up so much attention because of how good of a shooter he is. And still, he finds so much room on the pop and absolutely buries the underhand. So there's a lot of things to like, even with kind of Dane Smith hasn't played as well maybe as he started. And you look at some of the other guys. But it is kind of coming together. I think their faceoff game has looked a lot better with Adler taking the bulk of the draws. So there's been a lot more positives, albeit against the Cannons team who didn't have Lyle do Lyle stuff, and then against the Redwoods team who kind of relied on the two-pointer a little too much the week before and hit a lot of posts. So
I mean,
a little bit of luck, and it's a little bit of everything is coming together, but they still need to prove it to me for some reason.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. If I'm a betting man, I still kind of think that they kind of end up floating back towards the bottom of the pack. If you look here at their scores for, they're still at the lowest in the league with just 52, which I realize is only two lower than the next lowest. But I feel like for whatever reason, the Chrome just have something a little better going for them right now. And then their scores against is at 58, which is so much because of Blaze that it's just hard for me to kind of think that that's going to continue. Like, I don't know that he can continue to make 25 saves a game and continue to kind of, you know, keep them within shouting distance for an entire game so that at the end of the game, you know, it comes down to a matter of a few plays, which he's definitely been able to do so far. So if I'm a betting man, I kind of think that they end up kind of panning back down towards the bottom. Whether they're above or below the Canes, I think I'm not totally sure about. I do think that the Water Dogs end up kind of coming back over the top of them, though.
Interesting. I mean, I was going to say, like, is it just going to be what the Chaos do is start slow, figure themselves out, and be a better team?
Find ways to win games, yeah.
Yeah, like throughout their – it's what they did last year in the bubble. I know the bubble is a completely different environment, given that you are able to be with your teammates for this whole time. It was more like the World Games than it was, you know, a pro lacrosse season when you think of the structure of the season. So, I don't know. And to your point about Newman, I know we've kind of pointed him out as the example of, like, the fan voting going wrong, but he's a guy who has the potential to be one of the better defenders in the world. I don't think anyone disputes that he has – the athleticism and the skill set, just for whatever reason this past year, has not been his year in terms of doing that. So there's enough talent there. It just doesn't feel and maybe because they have more of the travel issue.
There is enough talent, at least offensively.
I do think on the defensive end there's enough talent there.
Right.
I think when you consider Rowlett, Blaze, and Newman, I think that when those guys are all at their best and when they're put into roles to be their best, which I think they were too aggressive to start the year. And yeah, maybe that hurt them. But offensively, I definitely think that there needs to be some sort of change or some sort of addition or some sort of, you know, and maybe kind of working to get maybe their entire offense revolves around getting Mac O'Keefe the open shot and that becomes their offense. But it definitely feels like there's enough talent on the defensive end to keep them in games. It's just figuring out what on the offensive side of the ball works for them.
Well, so the similarity between this year's Chaos and bubble year Chaos is they're sort of is figuring it out. Largely, it was actually just like getting new guys. You know what I mean? Like, it's different people doing the work. You know, so they started off terribly last bubble, and then they just removed Connor Fields completely. You know, and just set on the side. They just didn't play him anymore. And then they started running a lot through, you had Curtis Dixon and Austin Stotts coming down the middle. You know, they changed who they were on offense, you know, different personnel and everything. And it's what they're doing now. You know what I mean? Like they brought Ryan Smith in and he's playing attack now, you know, whether by, you know, need or by, you know, just their game plan or whatever. They've got him in, they bring Mac O'Keefe, you know, they draft, of course. Get rid of Sergio Salcedo. Jake Fracaro hasn't been producing as much. They're not really even really running as like midfield heavy. You know what I mean? Like they do have Dane Smith still, but like you said, hasn't been producing as much in these past couple games. But you know, it's just they are, I guess, willing, or else I don't know if you call it willing or forced to. They just kind of have to make a new offense because what they had wasn't working. So now I don't know if Ryan Smith's going to be good for, you know, three a game or if, you know,
he's. I think he will.
What was that?
I think he will. Ryan Smith's awesome.
Yeah, he's been very good off ball. I think he's been helping Josh Byrne as well. I think Byrne feels less of a need to take it to the cage himself with players like Cluche and Smith just constantly getting it open. And same with Mac O'Keefe. He's got a lot more options to work on more passing instead of, like, you know, backhand shots as the shot clock runs out and stuff like that. They were just killing them early on in the season. So, you know, the chaos, what we have noticed from them over the past is a willingness to just totally scrap what isn't working, be it players or, you know, game plans or whatever. So they just kind of have to be another team again, which is what got them to the championship last year.
And anything can happen in this league in terms of, you know, it's all but one team make the playoffs. So, and only one team gets a bye. So that's a lot of, like, weird stuff can happen in that first round of the playoffs. You know, you think that if the Archers are the second-place team and they lay an egg against the last team in the playoffs, that changes the whole complexion of what the postseason is in the Premier Lacrosse League. So it's not unreasonable to think that there could be some surprise team that makes the championship in this style of season that they have.
Right. Everything could look a lot different from here at the Wins Albany week. We got the 13th and 15th of August. So,
yeah, it seems like the season just started, didn't it? But we're
gone by so fast.
Yeah, it's. I mean, we're more than halfway through. We're well more than halfway through. I know after this, you know, week six is the All-Star weekend, so that doesn't count for the standings. So there's only three more weekends of lacrosse in the regular season for the Premier Lacrosse League. Right. That count towards the standings and are, you know, going to go towards the playoffs. So that's not a lot of time. It's going to be over before you really know it. And yeah, that's sad because it's been such a fun year so far. And I've said this before, you know, I know there's a lot of people who don't appreciate pro lacrosse, I guess is the way to put it. But if you haven't had at least a renewed interest in it this year, then I just don't understand it with you. This is, at the very least, very entertaining. Maybe it's not the most pure from your perspective or whatever, you know, on your high horse you want to say about lacrosse, but this has been a lot of fun. So I don't think we want to see it end anytime soon.
Well said.
Boo them. Boo.
NLL is – we haven't – I mean, this is not a Box Lacrosse podcast, but just a little bit of a tangent. NLL announcing its media rights deal with TSN. A U.S.-based rights deal is coming soon. The ownership of the new Las Vegas team, including Wayne Gretzky, Joe Tsai, and Steve Nash. These are the glory days of pro lacrosse right now. Like, we're going to enter a golden era of pro lacrosse. I am very bullish on the sport at the very top level right now. And the NLL, I think, is leading the charge. I love what the Premier Lacrosse League is doing right now with it being one pro field league. I'm just really happy to be a fan of the sport and be able to appreciate this and have more options to watch pro lacrosse than I ever have before, easily, not having to track streams down or change your VPN address to something to, like, if you're in Canada and you're trying to watch a game and you need to change it so your VPN is in North Carolina so you can watch a indoor lacrosse game, stuff like that, not going to happen now. You know, it's all really accessible. This is kind of, if pro lacrosse is going to make it these next 5-10 years, we're set up for success right now. So I'm really happy to be a lacrosse fan right now.
Shout it from the rooftop.
Mr. Positivity over here.
Love it. I'm equally excited to be a lacrosse fan. I don't know if anyone should be excited to be a Water Dogs fan. We segue into Friday action. Dan, you seem a lot more, like, high on them for some reason than I am. Although I was a little in and out of Saturday's game, but it was a great rebound performance from what they did against the Archers in Baltimore. There are a few face-off wins. TD obviously dominated the fourth quarter. Then, that's a season-defining win over the Redwoods, but.
Yeah, and what we haven't seen from them still is both Sowers and Reeves playing together. I think when that happens, we're going to be able to, like, that's just a total injection of an ability to get a step at any moment, because now year two is guarding Ben Reeves, and the way that he's been able to generate steps on ones all season has been really promising. And so when Sowers comes back and then has that one on him, and now Reeves is guarded by twos, and Schlosser and Kelly are getting downhill and, you know, doing their thing up above the goal, and Snyder's doing his thing up above the goal, and then they get down the alley, can move it down and go and pick for him. You know, like, that's really dangerous. And then ball goes out of bounds and Michael Sowers goes to pick it up and he's dodging you. Like, that's another level of dangerous right there too. So I think that the best is yet to come for that group, which is really where my optimism lies. And so I know we won't see him yet, but I do think that we will at some point. And once that happens, I think we're going to be able to see, you know, an injection of some dynamicness on offense there for them.
Would be funny if we saw him right up against the Cannons and Reese Eddy again, but
that's very true.
Yeah.
I guess won't happen, but we can wish.
It's out. This is out.
Now, with I said that weird stuff can happen. Teams reinvent themselves, and the format of the playoffs and the playoff structure allows for, you know, a team gets hot and they can win the championship. What if Sowers comes into this team in the middle of August, plays the last week of the season, they get in the playoffs?
Yeah, that's a perfect example of, yeah.
What do you do there? You don't know how to defend them, really. You know, no one in college ever figured it out. Obviously, the pro is a different game, but it's a possibility that that happens. You know, I think he's pretty close. You know, we saw him at our recruiting event.
Yeah.
He was there taking shots, and I don't think he's far off from being back in a lineup. Obviously, there's some medical clearance he has to get through.
We have to tell this story.
Yeah, go ahead.
Shout out Michael Mullen. So one of our interns, his name is Michael Mullen, for events, during the middle of the event, during our recruiting invitational, says, hey, do you mind if my buddy comes by? I have to string some sticks for him, and he wants to get him dialed in. And I didn't think anything of it. I'd like to
name drop the buddy.
Yeah, exactly. And I didn't think anything of it. I was like, sure, dude, whatever, I don't care. As long as you're doing your job, like, just make sure that, you know, you get them both done. He's like, all right, cool, sounds good. And then, like, a few hours later, Michael Sowers and Michael Mullen are on the field shooting. And I'm like, wait, what? Like, you just casually said your buddy. You didn't say it was Michael Sowers, dude. Like, that's information we could have done something with. But so I went over and, like, introduced myself, talked to him, super down to earth, really cool.
Took some shots with him. You took a few shots.
I wasn't going to go not, like, get some reps in with Michael Sowers.
Sure.
While having the opportunity to.
and I guess that's who strung his sticks since he's been in high school. And
yeah,
that's
yeah.
The only guy who does it.
Yep. Yeah. He's I was shocked. He's like one of those dudes that won't even touch his bottom string. Like, it's getting a little bagged out because it gets a little wet or something. He's like handing it to somebody else to, like, please fix this, like, make this work for me. It's like, oh man. I can't imagine being in those shoes. That would give me so much anxiety.
Yeah, I never touched my stick. I was never, like, one of the guys. Like, we had this guy on my team. We just called him Noggin. He just had a big head. So that's, like, what I actually don't even remember his real name, to be quite honest with you. But he was the guy who did everyone's sticks because he was the only guy who was really, like, interested in it. And I just was, like, I looked at it and I was like, that's too much attention to detail for me.
Probably going to start calling Michael Mullen Noggin now.
But yeah, so that's I have empathy for him in terms of the anxiety of stringing a stick. To me, is too much. I'd rather have someone else do it than me be responsible for it.
And then he had either Robertson. He had either Robertson help him out while he was away from our Michael Mullen. So he still had somebody else that he could rely on.
Well, let's hope we see him soon. Obviously, when you have, you know, when you deal with head injuries and stuff, obviously the caution is the name of the game in that. But hopefully we see him because, you know, obviously I think he's everyone's one of everyone's favorite players to watch in college. There's no doubt he's such an exciting person and player that we want to see him play at the pro level. But I'm excited for Minnesota. I'm really pumped for it. I'm going to be covering a lot of games this weekend, so I'm really excited to kind of bring you guys the action. And I think we are going to have another week of PLL happy hour next week. And then, I don't know, are we going to keep it going through the All-Star break, or are we going to keep it going just on game weeks? I don't know what we're going to do. But
Let's keep it rolling.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just record it and have it like as an exclusive or something. Like a subscriber exclusive. I don't know.
Ooh.
Paywall.
There we go.
So, awesome. Well, everyone, hope you're enjoying this season of Pro Lacrosse. I hope you're enjoying the PLL Happy Hour. We're excited to bring this to you each week and have a little fun, talk about Pro Lacrosse. Let's get after it. See you guys later.